one day, right? One day we'll get back to how things were, but it's getting harder and harder to get connected to the original way that we ate.
Are you getting teary?
I'm getting a little bit teary.
Gosh. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Can we get a tissue?
Thanks for bringing it up.
We need a tissue.
Hey, my name is Billy Deck, and I'm a restaurateur obsessed with what it takes to create the most memorable meals ever. Having come up working almost every position in the business, I've seen how there are usually hundreds of details that need to be orchestrated perfectly to satisfy the highest of expectations among all those that food brings together. This mix in chemistry, or lack thereof, makes for mind-blowing storytelling about more than just what's on the plate. So in each episode, with a unique and unforgettable guest, we will discuss the power of food, the importance of coming together for meals, and unravel, explore, and discover a life-changing dining experience that has forever impacted lives. This is the Meal of Your Life podcast.
Hey, what's happening? Thank you so much for coming back to the show. I truly appreciate it. I've been having a blast with this, and I hope you have too. And today's interview is no exception. I love this guest. She is so sweet and awesome and funny, and you're gonna hear us laugh, cry, go crazy, talk about some really cool stuff, because she has a really interesting life and background. Her name is Artie. She actually has her own show called Artie Party after she won the Next Food Network Star on the Food Network. She has a show on Cooking Channel called Taste and Translation. A lot of really cool things going on. We get to talk about culture, culinary traditions, all sorts of things from India, where she was born, to Dubai, where she was raised, to America, where she's just flourished. All sorts of really great tips for hosting parties in your home. There's just a lot of laughs, a little crying. It was just awesome. If you can't tell, this is actually from the National Restaurant Show. I don't think I mentioned it in the interview, but we're actually at the Meal of Your Life booth at the National Restaurant Show. Actually, I think I talk about it at the end of the show. It's the largest, longest running food show and bar show in the world. I had some really amazing interviews from there. If you haven't checked those out, you must. Like celebrity chef Ming Tsai was hilarious and so informative and amazing and entertaining. Iconic pioneer mixologist Tony Abiganin. I mean, wow, just the history and evolution of the spirit movement is just fantastic. Charles Riley, another mixologist, actually called the world's best bartender, and so insightful and just such a cool dude. And other interviews like from the herbal chef blew my mind. I mean, marijuana and cannabis in chef-driven culinary experiences, from underground to now mainstream. It'll just really, if you don't know about this, you must listen to that interview as well. But there's so much more. But first, let's get to my friend Artie.
I did a podcast for a little while. We didn't go to this extent.
No.
But it was very bootleg.
Yeah, good.
You just put like...
Where did you do that?
In our living room.
Oh, really? What was it about?
It was called Pass the Salt, and yeah, it's kind of on a semi-permanent hiatus because it was four hosts,
yeah,
and two of them just moved.
So what was
but
it about?
It was good. It was about the intersection of food and pop culture. So we would do things like reimagine like the whole family tree in Game of Thrones as people in the food world.
What?
Yeah. So like I can't even... We did it a while ago, but it was like I can't remember who... Like, we figured out who Jada was, who Mario was, like, who Paula was in the whole grand
scheme
of things.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was fun.
So what did you guys deduce from all that? How does food intersect with pop culture?
At the moment, food is pop culture.
Right.
I mean, I look at it from, like, who's kind of dipping their toes into the food world. And it's everybody. Everybody's trying to, from, like, online outlets to celebrities, actors... I mean, I look at feeds and even The Rock is showing us his pancake recipe, which is from the box, BT Dubs, but that's okay, no shade. Food is such an intimate part of our lives. I mean, you're literally taking something from the outside and you're putting it into your insides and then you're building your outsides from what you've put into your insides.
And then
it's a very intimate process, and there's something about sharing food with people that automatically puts like a shortcut in your interactions with them. So absolutely, like it's a huge part of pop culture because pop culture is just us sharing, yeah, you know, right? Sharing things that we think are cool.
Yeah, and it's a total reflection of yourself at that point. So you're really telling a story about yourself.
Completely.
Yeah. You were born in India?
I was born in India, yeah.
And did you live there for a little bit?
I lived there for 3 months.
Okay. And then, tell me about those 3 months.
No. They made a huge impact on me.
Yeah. But you are very, very close to the culture.
Yes, complete. I mean, I completely identify as Indian. Although I just got my American citizenship like a month ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank
what timing?
I know. Oh, what, I know.
What brought you to putting that in the forefront all of a sudden in the last month?
Well, you know, I also, there are things, like I want to bring my family over here from India. So I'm still super connected to it. And I grew up, I was born in India, but I grew up in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And food was the premier way for us, or the most important way for us to connect with our family back in India. Right. So that, you know, things like when we were having our morning cup of tea, which is very traditional in India, I knew that my grandparents had had a morning cup of tea. Or when we had dal and rice, I knew that at some point that day, somewhere in my family in India, someone was having dal and rice too. So it was a very palpable and sort of subconscious in a way.
Connective
tissue, yeah, of who, where I come from.
Right.
And I now have two kids, 3 and 1, and you know, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to remind these girls that they're half Indian, they're half American, half Indian.
How do you do that?
Through food.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the easiest way for me is to, you know, make
spices,
a meal. Yeah,
and
to make a meal and to then say, you know, this is something that Mama had when she was little, or, you know, when my parents come to visit, you know, that's another way for them to experience the food. And then I show them videos of how that food is made traditionally. I mean, the cool thing is there's so much available. Just I spend hours on YouTube, you know, and so I can show them like, hey, in the back villages of India, this is how they make it.
And how are they taking it?
I think it's interesting. I mean,
are they still like, Mom, I want pizza bagels after school,
you know,
and
kids,
peanut butter and jelly?
Like, and the thing is, at first I thought that I was failing as a mother because they're not necessarily head over heels over it. The one-year-old will eat anything. I think that's also because she's one. The three-year-old is like asserting her will. But I remember this when I was a kid too. We liked things that were creamy and sweet and kind of simple. I think anything more than that was like a little too overwhelming for our taste buds. So I found that, you know, if I sort of do gateway drugs, like just gateway drugs.
Yeah.
When I do gateway drugs like chicken tikka
for
masala.
Your kids?
All or
right. Because there's a sweet
there's
component.
A sweetness
right.
to that.
And a creamy.
Or if I pair, you know, green leafy vegetables with paneer, which is an Indian cheese, then they're like much more into it.
Are there Indian desserts too that come up?
Yeah,
or is it,
you know,
desserts aren't very big.
We have a
they?
Huge sugar tooth, sweet tooth in India, but the sweets are really, really, really sweet.
Right.
And so I haven't necessarily introduced them to that yet because I don't think I want to deal with the repercussions.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting that I wasn't even sure what Indian desserts were, because when you order in or you order at a restaurant, you really don't get into the desserts.
They
that
sort of
much.
Fall into a couple of categories. There's the fried ones. So there's something called gulab jamun that I just made on Guy's Grocery Games. And it's like, it's basically little donuts that are soaked in a cardamom syrup. That are really delicious. You only ever eat one or two because they're so rich. Then there's like pudding-y type things like halva and kheer, and it's basically where you cook anything, you know, lentils, noodles, grated carrot, grated beets, things like that, and you cook it with milk and sugar and saffron and pistachios and raisins, and depending on how far you cook that down, it's either soft and pudding-like or a little chewier, almost like a cake.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the last thing?
Is there jello-ish sort of
glutinous, my favorite dessert that we do is like called falooda. And it's in the back of my book, and it was my secret hope that I would take over America with falooda because it's so redonkulous.
I think what I've had.
Yeah,
it's
so
amazing.
It's like vermicelli at the bottom, like noodles. And then our version of chia seeds, which are basil seeds that do the same gel thing around them when you soak them.
Mm-hmm.
Little bits of jello, mm-hmm. ice cream, milk, and rose syrup.
That.
And then the way that I added my American twist to it is, of course, with like bright turquoise pop rocks on top.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. That's so crazy. So speaking of secret hopes, My mom is from the Philippine Islands, and I grew up in a very traditional family, Filipino family. And I've always had this secret hope that Filipino food would become more mainstream. And I feel like Indian food falls into that category of those Asian cultures that have yet to find their day in America. Yeah. Why do you think that is? And do you think it's coming?
Oh, I totally think. I think it's here.
I do too.
I think it's here. I mean, in LA.
I think it's here coming.
Yeah.
Like it's building momentum.
It's definitely here on the edges of America. So. Mm-hmm. I live in LA, and Filipino food, I can think of two restaurants right now that are taking Filipino food and putting in an income. You are amazing. Thank you so much. I just got coffee. So.
Why did you? Yours looks so beautiful. Yesterday she came back with
Thank you, Sarah Jane.
I was here and she was brought back pastrami sandwiches and pizzas
and all sorts of stuff. She's my magic genie, and I love her.
Amazing.
She lives in a lamp. So in LA, Filipino food is just now busting out.
Yeah.
And I think it's that there's now a generation that understands that you need a diplomat, right? You need someone to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Because America is so huge and there are so many cultures here and there's just so much. There's so much abundance that it's hard to taste everything.
Right.
And so... we need food that can kind of guide people in. The same way with my kids. I mean, we're just all grown-up kids. So we need foods that can act as gateway drugs to the real thing. And so I think that's why, you know, I don't know that people went feet first into sushi. They started with California rolls, and then they sort of moved over, and now people are eating uni with wild abandon, you know? So I think it's going to be the same thing with Indian food and Filipino food.
We actually I have a restaurant called Sunda in Chicago, and
what's it called?
Sunda.
Okay.
And it's Southeast Asian modern. There's Japanese, Chinese.
Yeah.
Gets through the Southeast countries where there's some Filipino food, and that was my crossover where I started introducing the more palatable, more familiar items like chicken adobo and the the barbecue sticks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then there's an off the menu sort of adventurous bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to do that, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the same way in Indian food. There's probably at every Indian restaurant 5 or 6 hits that are like the ones that everyone are cool with, and then they get adventurous from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crossover.
It's been, you know, I'll be honest, it's been a little bit frustrating just because I find that you know, when I think about the premier Thai restaurant in America, I think of Pop Kok in Portland. And then in LA, there was a restaurant called Sambar. And with both of those, it was an Indian restaurant. With both of those, you had white American chefs. And they at first I was frustrated because I was like, why are these guys doing well? And then I thought, okay, open your eyes and stop being so judgy. I can't help it. It's my job.
Yeah.
But I was like, they are doing the diplomat thing. You know, they, on one part of their brain, understands the quote-unquote American palate, and the other half of their brain understands this other palate that they are obsessed with and are so passionate about that they're willing to put it all out there for them.
Yeah.
So they're trying to bridge the gap and sort of reimagine it, and that's what's happened. I mean, you look at England, right, where Indian food is like pretty much
amazing,
the national
by the
food.
Way. Yes.
But how did it start? It was with things like chicken tikka masala and curry powder, neither of which are authentic Indian ingredients or recipes.
Crazy.
But that's how it started, and it can be the same thing here.
All right. Tell me about, speaking of bridging the gap, what are dining experiences like in the Middle East, in Dubai, where you grew up? Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, now it's just like dining anywhere else. When I was growing up, it was cool because we got to eat food from all over the world because people were drawn there from all over the world. So there was a built-in audience for it and built-in experts who were making it. So I remember that every Friday, which was the day off in Dubai, Thursday night was the equivalent of like our Friday night, you know what I mean, here. Oh. So Thursday night, my dad would go to this restaurant that was down the street, and he would just get a whole, like, table full of Lebanese food. And so it was like hummus and baba ganoush and kebabs and salads and all the different kinds of grilled meats that they do. And he would either bring it home or we would go out, and it was my mom's night off. so she didn't have to cook because she cooked every night. And that was incredible, you know. And growing up in Dubai, you just had so much available to you in its raw form. I mean, the fish market was massive. Really? And you had fresh fish pulled out of the Arabian Gulf that morning. You had prawns, I mean, massive prawns that I still haven't seen to this day. Shark and stingray. And then you had amazing lamb and mutton. And then the fruit and vegetables were incredible too. So there was, we went out and we ate there.
These are the parts that you don't really hear about, because it's, especially with Dubai, it's so flashy. It's like,
it's so
flashy.
But when I was growing up, it wasn't that way. It started getting flashy when I was maybe 12.
Have you been back?
I was back like 5 years ago, and I cried because I didn't recognize it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a main road there, Sheikh Zayed Road, and it used to be empty, and now it's the road that the tallest building in the world is on, and it's just peppered with buildings. And that's great. Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm so happy for their success. Of course, that's my home, really.
Yeah.
But I miss the empty sand dunes and camels just walking by, and I miss that. I miss that emptiness.
Is there a way to describe the South Asian or Southeast Asian or Middle East family connectivity over meals as opposed to what's sort of happening in America as of late? And I know that's a total generalization on all levels.
Well, that's the thing. For better or worse, at least growing up, my family and my culture, is the food is the main event. And I think that we share that in common even here in America. You think about the 4th of July, you think about Thanksgiving, you think about, you know, big football game watching days. I mean, there's all of that happening, but the coming around the table is the main event. And I think this idea of families breaking up is heartbreaking. And I know even when I grew up, we had two TVs in the house, and we would, you know, my parents would watch one TV and we would watch the other one and eat separately. And I am so adamant that we are not going to do that in my family, that it is going to be that one moment where we all put down our phones, because I'm just as guilty.
Yes. Especially in our world of being on
and all the time,
connected, performing, in a sense that you're always projecting.
I sort of cherish the moments where I'm unable to connect, like on the plane.
Yeah.
I don't buy Wi-Fi. I don't. And, you know, and things like if I have, you know, if someone's blessed me with car service, let's say from my house to the airport, I put my phone down and I talk to the driver, because
I don't do that.
You don't get to talk to people ever. You know what I mean? We don't have those moments. So I think the great thing about food, and to answer your question, the first thing I thought about when you talked about what is it about food culture in South Asia, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, that pulls people together, one thing is that we eat with our hands.
Yeah.
And I really think there's something to that. I think there's something to tactile breaking of bread and sharing that bread, touching it, breaking it in two and giving a piece to someone. I think there's magic in there somewhere, and there's something about that entire process that connects you to people.
Because it's, again, you're sharing, you're giving, your physical act of being connected.
Yeah. It makes me think about my husband. If you ever met my husband, Brendan, he would hug you. He hugs everybody. Whether they, and you know, obviously there are some people that don't like it, but I have seen so many people who, when I met them, were cold as ice, and then he hugs them and they melt. And you realize it's because they live a life where they're not getting touched all
that
often.
Where is he from?
He's American.
Oh.
Yeah, he's from Boston, a really friendly, warm, fuzzy city.
Yeah.
We
don't suggest getting off the plane in Boston and just start hugging people. That's actually how it works.
He has done it. Yeah. He's also 6 foot, so there's, you know. But I think that we're kind of starved for connection in this day and age. I don't even want to say this country, because I think it's happening all over the world. As connected as we are, we're kind of starving for real connection that's not through a screen or metal. Like, we want skin to skin. And so whether that's physical touch or sharing food, that's how we can feed each other.
Speaking of your family, this whole sort of path you've taken, is there a particular meal memory that really sticks out in your mind that speaks to who you are, or that it that maybe changed the trajectory of your life, that maybe you had an epiphany about
food,
who you are, or that you love, anything big?
The first thing that I thought about was a few years ago, we went back to India for my cousin's wedding. We went to Goa, which is where my ancestors are from. It's the southwest coast of India, has a huge Portuguese influence. And so the food there is very singular to that region, which is lots of seafood, lots of coconut, lots of vinegar and chilies. The Portuguese actually brought chilies to India. We didn't use it before they came.
Really?
Yeah. Which is funny, because you think Indian food spicy, but before they came, it wasn't. So very interesting. It was very aromatic and had spices, but the chilies came from the Portuguese. So it's spicy, vinegary, very bright, coconutty, lots of whiskey and toddy and stuff, because the Portuguese were Catholic and they brought this whole tradition of fermenting with them. In any case, we were staying at this very sleepy resort. It was the off season in the middle of the monsoons, and we had been at the beach. It had rained. We'd come in and they were making these tiny little mackerel about the size of my hand, tiny little baby mackerel. They just slathered them with the sort of spice paste of the region, which is called rachado masala. They just done that and then simply grilled it. Oh my God. I ate like six of those little fish. And it helped me realize that sometimes you don't need fancy to make an impact with someone. The fact that this fish had just, and we had been up at 6 a.m. with the fishermen, helping them pull the nets in.
And who was with you when you were
It was me and my husband. It was before we had kids, my parents, my sister. So it was so cool to have that experience of like, a touch of the ancient in the now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because back in the day, that's what they would have done.
How'd they make you feel?
A little teary. A little teary, because I sort of was like, I would like to live like this every day, and I don't think it's possible, so I'm just going to treasure this moment right now. Yeah. One day, right? One day we'll get back to how things were, but it's getting harder and harder to get connected to the original way that we ate.
Are you getting teary?
I'm getting a little bit teary.
Gosh. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Can we get a tissue?
Thanks for bringing it up.
We need a tissue. I would love to roll all this into Arty Party.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for people when inviting people into your home and sharing your culture?
I mean, there are little things that I do when people come over. I don't wait on them too much. So I do say, oh, would you like something to drink? The glasses are in that cabinet over there. Because I want them instantly to feel like this is your house. Oh.
I
love it.
Intrusive invitation.
I want people to be all up in my house.
Wow.
I used to be like a perfectionist clean freak, and having children has cured me of that. I want them to feel super comfortable, you know. I think that's why I've always loved, like, you know, people are like, what's a great first date food? I'm like, a burger, because you eat it with your hands. It's really messy. There's no pretense. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that's the same thing with food experiences, is sometimes if it's too elevated, then people don't feel comfortable. So if there's a way for you to take your favorite food, maybe make it a little easier to eat, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But just really just cook from your heart, and I think that you will have the best experiences. You know, don't try to impress anybody. Just cook from your heart. And it doesn't have to be that many things, too.
Any major fails that you want people to stay away from? Besides the one that you've already mentioned, a great, great handful. But and I only say that because I know that I've already broken maybe two or three of those.
Oh no. No, I mean, I think I've let's see, a lot of times I've gotten really ambitious in my mind about the menu that I'm gonna serve at a gathering, and then I'm stuck in the kitchen the entire time.
Got it.
And the thing is, honestly, that's my happy place. So part of me would much rather be in the kitchen than talking with people, because I'm sort of a go 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 kind of person, and the idea of just sitting down with nothing to do and just talk to someone can sometimes, it can kind of make me crazy. So there have been lots of times where I'm like cooking until the last minute, or you know, one thing that people don't think about, especially if you don't have AC or you don't have heat, is cooking and not thinking about the weather conditions on the day that you're cooking.
Huh.
So there have been days in LA where it's like, I didn't realize it was going to be 95 degrees and that, and I planned to make a roast chicken.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so dumb. That was like my biggest fail, apart from trying to make a turkey and not for Thanksgiving. And not defrosting it. It was my very first turkey.
Anything else happening with you coming up?
I'm now a judge on a show on Food Network called Cooks vs. Cons, and I'm really excited to
Cooks vs. Cons?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's so exciting. So there are four cooks before you. There are two judges, four cooks, right? Two of them are the real deal, professionals.
Stop.
Two of them are pulling the wool over your eyes, and you've got to figure out who they are. So the whole time they're cooking, I mean, they have a challenge too, like mystery ingredients and stuff like that. You're watching their knife skills, how they move around the kitchen, their ingredient choices, how they're treating those ingredients and everything, trying to figure out who's the cook and who's the con. Whoever makes the best food, no matter what, wins, I think it's $10,000. But personally, for the judges, we want to be right.
Yeah.
Because we want to be able to say, we can spot the cook. And, yeah.
But it goes to your first point about how everyone's jumping in to food.
Everyone's jumping
in. Cooking.
Yes, and there are some incredible cons out there. There really are. I mean, I have been stunned by some of these
people.
That sounds
awesome.
And what's available to them, so that they're making food that you'd only expect at a restaurant.
Anything else going on coming up?
I'm...
As if that was not enough. And two kids.
And two kids, yeah. I'm thinking about my second cookbook.
Oh, cool.
And
what was the name of the first one again?
Artie Party.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. And so the second one, I'm thinking, especially now that I have children, I cook so differently.
Do you?
So differently.
A little more healthy?
Just with more anxiety.
Oh.
Because you have 30 minutes. I mean, you really don't have that much time.
Right.
So I'm thinking about that. And now I'm just plotting the next chapter.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How do people get in touch with you? Or interact with you?
I'm on everything.
I need to ask for your cell phone number or anything like that.
My cell phone number is 310. Instagram, I'm at artypartypics. And Facebook, just find me on my fan page. And I'm going to start going live this summer. I'm going to start doing Facebook Lives week. Because I miss cooking on camera. I miss that a lot.
Yeah.
So just for the joy of it, I just want to get back to that.
And maybe podcasting, now that it's all of a sudden is so huge and
I'm so addicted to it, too. Yeah. I listen to them constantly.
And last but not least, since we're at the National Restaurant Show, could you just say a little bit about the National Restaurant Show?
You know, I think the cool thing about the National Restaurant Show is it's an opportunity to see what people across the entire industry are up to. You know, I think that when you work in a restaurant, you're kind of in your hole. And it's hard to get out and see other people in your industry because they're all in their holes too. So this is cool because you get to see new technologies. Like I just saw this really cool way to fill up a beer glass upside down. It's like really weird and cool new ingredients and new techniques because, you know, we all need a refreshing in our cooking spirit. You know what I mean? And this is an opportunity to have new ideas and just be inspired again.
Okay, my thanks to the lovely Artie. You can contact her at Artie Party. That's at AARTIPAARTI. And also thank you so much to the National Restaurant Association for the awesome The Meal of Your Life booth at the National Restaurant Show. That was just iconic, huge, amazing. I can't wait to be back next year. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Please let me know who you want me to interview next. Hit me on social media. It's just at Billy Deck. You can catch me and what I'm up to on my website, which is just billydeck.com. So you know, in case you don't, my last name is spelled D-E-C, so it's B-I-L-Y-D-E-C. And please, 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 if you haven't already, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or Stitcher. When you do that, not only do I get the info back and just get so motivated and excited by all the positive comments and ratings and suggestions that you guys have been giving. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But it also gives those platforms a heads up that they should share it with new markets. And that's what it's all about, sharing these stories. Sharing is caring. I really, really appreciate you guys spreading the word. And thank you so much. And I can't wait to tell you more next week. Thanks.